Shalom and welcome to Neshama Cast, exploring Jewish spiritual care today. Brought to you by Neshama, Association of Jewish Chaplains. I'm your host, Rabbi Ed Bernstein. Welcome to a bonus edition of Neshama Cast. This is part two in the series Let's Talk, Interfaith Voices on Israel. In this series, Rabbanit Alyssa Thomas Newborn, president of Neshama Association of Jewish Chaplains, engages with diverse faith leaders across America to discuss personal and religious connections to Israel. In this program, Rabbanit Alyssa engages in conversation with Erica Cohen Moore, executive director of the National Association of Catholic Chaplains. This program initially took place before a live online audience on March 27, 2024. Let me turn it over now to Rabbanit Alyssa Thomas Newborn.
I want to welcome everyone tonight to Let's Talk, Interfaith Voices on Israel. My name is Alyssa Thomas Newborn, and I'm the Rabbanit of Congregation Netzivot Shalom in Teaneck, New Jersey. I'm a board-certified chaplain at a local New York hospital and the president of Neshama Association of Jewish Chaplains. It is my privilege to begin our second session of the series, Let's Talk, Interfaith Voices on Israel. I want to express gratitude to our speaker tonight, Erica Cohen Moore, our listeners, and our co-sponsoring organizations, Netzivot Shalom, Moshe House, based in the International Rabbinic Fellowship, and Neshama Association of Jewish Chaplains. As you know, if you've been here for our first series, in this series, we hear diverse faith leaders across America discussing their personal and religious connections to Israel. Each of these sessions features a positive interfaith bridge builder, and our sessions are virtual and will be recorded and accessible afterward on Neshama Cast, which is Neshama Association of Jewish Chaplains podcast. You can find Neshama Cast anywhere that you enjoy listening to podcasts. So the series began in response to the division and distrust and isolation that the Jewish community has felt since October 7th, the loss of interfaith relationships among friends and colleagues, and the shocking rise in anti-Semitism. As a reminder, the purpose of this series is not to discuss the specifics of the Israel-Hamas war. It's to share positive stories and connections around interfaith communities and build those bridges. Hearing directly from a person face-to-face, as we are with Erica tonight, accesses truth and our shared humanity. So through these sessions, what we're going to do is strive to build positive connections around Israel through our diverse faith's relationship to the Holy Land and get a window into the heart of a person and a community that we may otherwise may not be hearing right now. I'm so grateful to say that I have personally worked with each of our speakers and cherish their ongoing friendship and leadership. So tonight's discussion, we have the privilege to learn Erica Cohen Moore's personal and religious relationship with Israel. We're going to hear her heart and her voice and her reflections on her faith. And she is a friend of the Jewish people. And I'm going to read her bio in a second and explain some personal connections too. So Erica Cohen Moore is the executive director of the National Association of Catholic Chaplains. She implements the strategic plan and overall management of the corporation, provides leadership, strategic visioning, and guidance on NACC, that's how it's referred to, NACC activities, and also represents NACC to the United States Conference on Catholic Bishops, professional chaplain organizations, and other community agencies. Erica, tell me if I'm saying this right. Before serving at NACC, you were the director of the Seattle Archdiocese Office of Discipleship for over 20 years, which is, wow. That's an amazing, amazing source of work. I just want to say that it's important here to thank NACC and Erica specifically. Following October 7th, NACC immediately came out with a strongly supportive statement as a friend of the Jewish people. And both before October 7th and after, NACC and Erica have consistently been allies both to Neshama Association of Jewish Chaplains and the wider Jewish community. So as an example, when NAJC proposed the creation of an initiative to combat anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim bias. Erica was the first to jump in. I don't know if you remember, you really were the first to jump in and support the endeavor. And in the task force that came out of that, she's been a true faith partner and advocate. We've already, together with others on the task force, we've already sat on a panel with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies together, and working with colleagues from the Strategic Partners, which are the interfaith chaplaincy organizations, in outlining guidelines for interfaith dialogue and ongoing bridge building during war and trauma. Speaking of the larger Catholic community, and I'm not going to generalize, but just share like a couple glimpses into what I'm trying to emphasize. In my hospital where I work, the Catholic priest was the first to lead a prayer service recognizing the horrors of October 7th and mourning the victims. He did this, Mamish, specifically, he did this on October 7th. And the recreational therapist that I work closely with in the psychiatric emergency department, who is also Catholic, was the first colleague of mine to reach out to me to check in following October 7th. And in Teaneck, in the neighborhood where I live, I've heard stories from Catholic neighbors about how they've been combating anti-Semitism and building bridges very actively. So, in short, many of our Catholic colleagues, neighbors, and friends have been and continue to be invaluable partners and sources of support. And we are so grateful beyond words. Finally, I want to acknowledge that we are especially grateful to Erica for joining us during Holy Week, a busy time for her and her community. Erica, we know many of the observances really begin tomorrow, and we wish you and your family a happy Easter, and that the whole Holy Week will be meaningful and joyful throughout. So again, thank you so much for making time to talk to us tonight. And I will now ask you our first question. We really want to get to know you more than what just from my perspective. So please tell us about your background, your work, and faith community. We'd also love to learn more about Holy Week to give us the context for this time in your calendar as well.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. What's hard for me is that I would much rather hear from all of you and so and hear your story. So I'll do the best I can. I have been with National Association of Catholic Chaplains for 2+ years. It's been a wonderful time. Had an opportunity to work with Alyssa and Allison and Rabbi Mo and Rabbi Joe, and just a great experiences. I come to this after 20 years of serving for the Archdiocese of Seattle. I worked for 8 bishops. And in my role, we were the Office of Discipleship, but I think we had about 68 other titles throughout my time there because that's what we do in church. We just like to change our titles all the time. It's good. It keeps us entertained. It keeps us reordering business cards and all the things. But one of my favorite things to do in my role was pastoral care and overseeing all the work we were doing in prisons and hospitals. I live in a port city, so we have a really strong port ministry, human trafficking, working with the poor, immigration, et cetera. So that was really where my heart was. I started my venture into ministry many, many years ago. I went to the College of St. Benedict, St. John's University in Minnesota. It's cold if you've ever been there. And went there as an econ major, wanted to become a stockbroker. Clearly, that's not where I ended up. But always had this profound love for theology and religion. And I can talk a little bit about that. But ended up doing prison ministry and falling in love with it and really wanting to do chaplaincy. And so I was a very young vocation that really hit me when I was about 19 or 20. And so changed my major, theology, went to grad school at Seattle U. Really wanted to do prison ministry. I did prison ministry for about a year, realized I'm more of a bureaucrat, not a chaplain. So I value and appreciate all of you and your gifts because I don't hold all of them. But I did a little bit of ministry, which is good. I also have a profound love for ministries. Healthcare is so important, but really trying to get NACC to look broader beyond healthcare and into all of those other places. Personally, you might say, what on earth are you doing with the last name Cohen? So my dad is Jewish, my mother's Catholic. I grew up strongly with both. I will show you this picture. I don't have to give you any explanation of this, but that was my grandma's. And so I have to explain this to my Catholic people. But I
Wow.
don't need to explain it to you. Yeah, this is
Amazing.
many generations. So I had a very strong Jewish grandmother. She taught me much. She gave me, I think, my first Martin Buber book when I was like 11. So, got through that and then came back to it as an adult and really figured out what it meant. But she had a huge influence on my life. And so Judaism's just had a huge impact. And actually, part of my vocation and wanting to learn more, trying to figure out all the things. And maybe by the time I die, I will have figured out my real role and identity. So looking forward to that moment. But it's really appreciated the opportunity to grow up in a bi-faith family with two parents who really believe strongly in their faith. And we did grow up my Catholic, but we did have Jewish traditions. And I apologize. I have a 17-year-old daughter looking right in my window at the moment, so a little distracted, but that's what happens when you have 17-year-olds. So just that incredible experience. And then I also grew up in a biracial family. I have two African American brothers. So just a lot of diversity and grateful for that diversity. And I think it's brought me to the place I think I'm here because of all that diversity. I also had a very diverse family. I have a lot of family members from Israel. And so I'm excited to be here today, really, to honor them and how they have formed me over time. And yeah, I could probably say a whole lot more, but that's just a little bit about me and who I am and where I've come from. Part of a Catholic church, Catholic faith. Clearly, I worked for bishops for a really long time, so I understand it and I'm a part of it. But I also, my best friend here in Seattle's Jewish, and so I get to still do all the things. I get to go home usually for Passover with my kids. This year we cannot go to Passover, and I hate to say this out loud, but I will do it. We actually have a tradition in our family. I shouldn't even admit to this, but we watch the Ten Commandments every year, all 4 hours, Charleston Heston. My kids love
Wow.
it. And I tried this year. I asked them, I said, can we like go to the Easter Vigil on Saturday? And they're like, no, we're watching the Ten Commandments. So it's real. So
Love
that's
it.
my story. It's a little bit all over the place, but happy to be here.
We're so grateful you're here and we so appreciate that diversity. I want to just I didn't say this before, but Erica did say she wants to hear from other people. So if anyone has questions, feel free to throw them in the chat. You can put them in the general chat to everyone. I know Erica really wants to have a sense of who's in the room, and so we really appreciate you jumping into the chat if that feels right. So I mentioned Holy Week. Would you mind just giving us a little bit of a sense of this timeline, just for anyone who maybe doesn't know that term?
Holy Week, we're basically coming into the Holy Triduum. You don't even try to say it, you don't need to, but it pre prepares us for Easter. So it's Jesus's journey of sitting at the Last Supper with his disciples and basically knowing what's going to happen. And then on, which begins on Holy Thursday and then Good Friday. And these are all very holy days for the Catholic faith. Jesus is crucified on the cross, and then on Easter Sunday, he is clearly risen and resurrected. And so it's our celebration. And so, and this is a very, Christmas is also a very important time. We have other holidays that are very important, but Easter is kind of the pinnacle of our faith for sure. So.
Thank you so much for sharing that. So, since our discussion topic is on Israel, I'm wondering if you can share, especially, it's very interesting. You also have family in Israel. In your faith tradition, what is the role of the land of Israel? And also, if you want to share a little bit about who your family is there and what connections you still have.
Yeah, sure. Love to. So the Jewish side of my family is actually from Russia. So we don't actually have direct family ties to Israel. So all of our family that's in Israel are married into the family. And so my aunt is married to somebody and they met on a kibbutz many, many years ago. And he is a Zionist, a faithful Zionist, and he talks to me all the time about it. And then I have a couple of cousins that have married people from Israel. And so it's the connection and just walking with them and understanding their real profound concerns right now and being sensitive to it. We're celebrating Easter and we're all posting on our Facebook pages, but I think there's a real sense of sensitivity and need to recognize that It's not joyful all over the world right now, and for all of our family members. So, yeah.
I think that speaks to many of our hearts. And, you know, we just had the holiday of Purim, which is an extremely joyful time. And there was, I spoke about this in our congregation, but there was someone actually in Israel wrote this beautiful poem in reflection, asking permission to really celebrate the holiday, like from God and from the people of Israel to say, you know, we're holding all this pain, and how can we possibly experience this joyful time? And yet we know that we're supposed to, and we have to, and that's part of life. So I think what you just spoke to, it resonates on a lot of levels. So what is the role of the land of Israel in the Catholic faith? Just to ask a huge question that could be like a
Big question, right? Well, I think it's the land where the three primary faiths come from, and so the Catholic faith very much believes in the ancestry of our brothers and sisters from the Jewish faith, and this is where we came out of and where we began. Jesus, if and who believes in Jesus, we believe that he was Jewish. His mother was Jewish. His father was Jewish, and Israel is where our faith began, and all the places. Especially right now during Holy Triduum and Easter week, we experience and explore all the sites of Israel. And I think of the one that comes up the most, and I'm sure many of you have been there, is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and it's in the Old City of Jerusalem, and it's really considered the most holy site for Christians. And it's where we think Jesus was crucified and buried and resurrected. And so an important site for many of us. But so, I mean, as you know, the Bible comes alive when you go to Israel, and I can talk about my own experience, but all the places where, when we read about the Gospels and Jesus and the miracles and in the Old Testament, it's the Sea of Galilee, Cana, turning the water into wine, Capernaum, Masada, all the places. And so Israel, such a profound place, and probably Jerusalem having the most profound impact on our faith, but seeing all of it with the Western Wall, the Mount of Olives, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So yeah, and then and I can talk about my own experience and what was probably the most profound for me, but in the Catholic faith, this is where our Catholic faith comes alive.
I love how you said that. This is where our Catholic faith comes alive. To think that Holy Week is also a time where you would be walking through the old city and feeling that. And I think, you know, again, many of us really understand. As you were speaking, you know, I can just imagine all those places and what it is for all of us to feel we want to go back there. We have these memories. So I think we would love to hear about your first personal experience in Israel, visit to Israel. We'd love to hear personally about your connection.
Sure. So admittedly, I will be as honest as I can be. I went when I was 17 years old, and I
Like
went
your
with a,
daughter at the window.
yeah, like my daughter at the window, and I probably hit the same maturity level. So I will try to, but it was, I've had the opportunity to travel my whole life. We lived in Japan for a little bit when my dad did his residency. We've moved, we've done, travel's just a huge part of our family. But it wasn't until that I went to Israel where I probably had the most profound impact, just in general, of history, faith, culture, all the things. It was so profound. I had the opportunity to go kind of one of those, trips that they sell, and it was 17 of us girls from an all-girl high school. Probably not the safest thing to do. We had one chaperone. We started in Egypt. We went to Rome. We went to Italy. Sorry, we went to Rome, Israel, and then Greece, ended in Greece. So, trying to explore and feel our faith just across multitudes of locations. And so, when I went to Israel, I was expecting some like tropical place, we could just go hang out and just such a different experience and such a profound experience. And I tell everybody I know, you really can't understand your faith fully until you go to Israel. And again, it goes back to it's where our faith comes alive. And you see it, you can read about it, but paper doesn't do anything, right? Until you're there and you feel it. And I don't think you can fully understand that. Sorry. That's my dog. They have a dog and kids.
Me too, I'm with you.
I'll shut the door if I need to, but it's, I'll go shut the door. Hold on one second. My apologies. The professional life of a chaplain with family. So, but I would say I didn't fully understand the tension between the faiths until I was there on site. And you see how small it is, and you see just the geography and everything, and how people are sharing this geography. So it's not like where I grew up in Nebraska, where you have tons and tons of space and you can, go to different corners. It's not. So that was really profound for me. It was regretfully, I've not had the experience to go back. My father is still alive. He wants to go back. He wants to bring the entire family. I really want my three kids to experience it and soon. And we were actually planning to go back potentially this past fall. And of course, that didn't happen for all the reasons. So, yeah, just I wish I could talk about Israel forever. All of you have probably been there. You know it, you understand it. But from a Catholic and from a Catholic who grew up in a Catholic and Jewish home, it was profound. And I always tell my kids they won't fully understand the traditions of their two families and the faith of their two families until they go there. So, yeah. And I
Just
apologize for the dog barking.
no apology needed. I think we really appreciate hearing that, and I also I just want to name that feeling of your faith coming alive. I also think for any of us who've been to Israel, it really hits home as well. And you've really two questions are coming up for me right now. One is you did mention your kids, and I'm wondering how you speak to your kids about Israel. You mentioned what you just said now of wanting them to see it. But without being in Israel, what is their relationship with Israel like?
A great question. I think they understand that it's this place that their mother's been, their grandfather's been. We talk about it often. They know that some of their family, their extended families from there. I have my middle son is really discerning, kind of exploring Judaism because he feels more of a call into that. And so I think a trip to Israel would be profound for him. Out of all three, but especially for him. And so I hope he can have that experience and soon, because I think it's a great way in a world where the world's getting secular, and I live in Seattle, it's very secular. There's churches around, but they're not as prevalent as maybe East Coast, Midwest. And so your faith isn't on every corner, but when you go to Israel, it's on every corner. It's everywhere. And that's really beautiful, especially in a time when things are becoming secularized and our kids don't really understand their faith, to the extent that they should.
That's such a profound point that you're making. And I guess, I want to ask you why you think that Israel is such a place that's meaningful to different faiths. It's another question that, we asked our last speaker. And I just want to highlight that you mentioned it's on every corner, that religion's on every corner. And also that tension you named in your a couple minutes back, which
Yeah,
is
and
a very meaningful thing you said. Go ahead.
probably repeat myself a little. Oh my gosh, my dog found his way back in. It's that Israel is going back to just secularization. I really enjoy to travel. I enjoy to travel with my family, and they haven't really experienced a place yet where religion is so profound and it's everywhere, and it would just be a circle around them like a blanket. It would just blanket them in a really warm, welcoming way. And so that's it. You walk down the streets, and it's just everybody has a part of the story. So Muslims have a part of the story. Jews have a part of the story. Catholics have a part of the story. Even the Mormons are there, and they have a part of the story. And so for all of these faiths to come to this one spot and to feel so profoundly moved by it, that's amazing, right? I don't know if there's another spot in the universe or the our world that has that or holds that. So.
I think we do have a question in the chat, and I love what you said about the blanket of faith and that how amazing it is we have that space. So thank you for giving us that imagery as well. There's a question in the chat, which was thanking you for sharing your passion and wondering how you explain anti-Semitism, if you've broached it with your kids, how you speak about that.
It's a great question. It's real. We've experienced, I mean, that was silly to say, of course it's real. But it's even in a when I go to work, when I'm with my kids, people probably perceive that I'm Catholic. And the amount of there's anti-Catholicism that exists too, but it's different. It's different. Anti-Semitism, my kids have experienced just being in relationship with other family members. My father, we grew up in Nebraska, in Omaha, Nebraska, and it was a challenge. It was a growing Jewish community, and we grew up with a Jewish father, a Catholic mother, and two African American brothers. And the Catholic church we went to invited us not to be there anymore because of those two things. And that's real, right? And that was an experience we all had as kids, and that has impacted most of my siblings being Catholic. And there was other experiences. So even though like my sister was Catholic, she had an experience where a cop pulled her over, gave her a ticket. She wasn't in the wrong, all the things. He was eventually fired. It was named that he was anti-Semitic, all the things. But so these are experiences that are real, and these are stories that we tell our kids so they know them, and because they need to know it, and they need to know it exists. It's also the tension that lives in my own faith. So I am Catholic. I grew up Catholic, but when you're Catholic and your father's Jewish, you have a different lens. So when you go and you sit and listen to a homily at Mass, sometimes you're like, wow, you shouldn't have said it that way. That wasn't the right way to say it. Your intentions were good, your theology was bad. I will never say which priest or who or when or what, but that's true. I even look at now, I shouldn't even say this out loud, but I'm going to. It's The Passion of Christ, by Mel Gibson. I mean, if you've seen it, you're probably all twitching. Yeah, don't worry, I don't. It's not something I would ever encourage anybody to watch. I watched it myself. I watched it and I was blown away that this was actually a thing and that we were encouraging this in our church. So those things are real. Those things are real. Anti-Semitism still lives in our faith. And I don't think most of the people that live their lives as Catholic think it's there or would want it there intentionally or believe it intentionally, but it's there and it exists. And I think especially because I grew up in a family that was so multifaceted, I just see it differently and I see it more. So, great question. I don't know if I answered it for you, but
That was a phenomenal answer. I have to just say that in our first session and in this second session, there's been now reference to two different movies that depicted anti-Semitism, or depicted the narrative of how the Jewish people have functioned in history or rewriting history. And I think that's it's just a very powerful point that you made. And just to put it in context, that was actually something that came up in our previous discussion as well. I want to just grab the language you use, that anti-Semitism, I think you said lives in the Catholic faith, that is something that does live there. And I just wonder if you could say a little bit more about how we can understand that and then how we can address that, especially in building bridges.
Sure. Yeah, and I think in the last 40 years, especially, and since John Paul II, I think we've tried to make huge strides to talk about interfaith and ecumenism and what does that look like. We've had a few steps backwards, but it's this conversation that, and it's common in a lot of faiths. Well, if you have to be Catholic, right, to go to a better place or something. And we're just trying to get away from that, right? To say everybody has a belief and their belief is strong and it's profound and it's powerful and it comes from somewhere. And so how do we as Catholics lift that up? We can still have our own personal beliefs and integrity in our own faith, but we have to allow space for others to believe. And so especially now, I mean, you look at I love my neighborhood. I live in a wonderful neighborhood. I live in a secular world out here in Seattle. It's a different world out here. But I go outside and I see at least three or four of my neighbors are Hindu. And so that's really, you see that outside of their houses. A family right down the street from us is from Israel. The father just had a heart attack. The Jewish community has surrounded that family in a way that I've never experienced. And so, but so I go outside and I get to see kind of multi-faith in amazing ways. I know it's different in other parts of the country. And so, and anti-Semitism, I think, lives differently in other parts of the country. So we live it out here in Seattle, but everybody in Seattle is just so nice to each other and all the things. But it doesn't mean that it's kind of rooted at the next level.
You guys have coffee, so
We have coffee, so we're all just really like high strung. And so all of those.
beautiful. So I mean that's such a, just to imagine your block too. And I think each of us can imagine our own block and what it looks like and what it means to know our neighbors. Another question was just shared about community relations and building bridges with the Jewish community, especially when there's the history that there may have been concern or fear of proselytizing or that sort of what really what you were naming now, what thoughts you might have on community relations and building bridges.
Yeah, no, great question. It's so the Catholic Church has really, whether we're doing it or not, I think it depends on where you're at and what part of the world, but we've really tried to get away from proselytizing. So it's not a term we like to use. We realize it happened many, many years ago. It probably still continues to happen throughout the world, but it's not who or what we want to be. We want to share our story about Jesus and about God and about all the amazing things of our faith. But we don't want it to do it to influence you or to make you feel like you have to change your faith. So I think one of the strongest groups we have, I mean, the Catholic Church, we're not perfect by far, but we have some really strong external organizations, and I think they hold the faith so well. So, like Catholic Relief Services, Catholic Charities or Catholic Community Services. These St. Vincent de Paul, I mean, you've probably heard of these organizations, and their people go to those organizations to volunteer for those organizations and be part of those organizations because they have a faith in Jesus and that's their personal faith. But it's not their job to put that faith on others. We serve others because we believe, not because other people have to believe. Absolutely not. So we're not going to say you have to believe in Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior. We don't use that language in the Catholic Church, but we're not going to say that in order to get like food, at a shelter or something. It's just not who or what we are anymore. So we're really trying to get away from proselytizing, although I do know it happens. In terms of community relationship, or community relations, we really encourage, again, it's different. So we work under the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. All the bishops function differently in every part of the country and every part of the world, although we're one Catholic universal church. I think my dog's gonna bark again, so I'm just gonna warn you. But it's so every place does this a little bit differently. But I like here in Seattle, all of our priests, all of our faith communities are encouraged to be part of an interfaith or ecumenical group in their community. They're really encouraged to sit with other pastors, rabbis. We even used to do like priest reviews, and it was part of their review. And if they didn't do it, they would get a little like, why didn't you do that? Why aren't you trying to foster those relationships? And so that's really very real. So, great question. And while you ask me the next question, I'm going to try.
Okay, I think that if you can give us a little bit of a just really brief overview of how the Catholic Church works in terms of the Vatican and bishops and priests and I because I think that those are terms that some of us might be more
Yeah,
familiar
sorry.
with and others not.
To learn about
Super assumption on my
anti-Semitic.
part. So we are hierarchical. And so we are a hierarchical church, which means we do have layers. And the very top is the Pope. And we currently have Pope Francis. He's just an incredible human being. And then we have the College of Cardinals. And there's so many cardinals throughout the world, and those are appointed by the Pope. And then the cardinals tend to run bigger locations like New York, Boston, et cetera. But This Pope has actually appointed some cardinals in place that really kind of sit outside the rule book, which is curious and interesting and kind of wonderful. And then we have under cardinals, there's archbishops, and archbishops are appointed in places where there's a bigger city. So I live in Seattle, bigger Catholic population, so we have an archbishop. A smaller town would have a bishop, so maybe like the Bishop of Reno. And they're basically the shepherds of their community. They oversee their community. And then within an archdiocese or a diocese, you have priests, and the priests are the head of the parish, and they could be the head of a ministry. They can also be chaplains. And then you would have 40 years ago, 50 years ago in the Catholic Church, you would only have priests, you would have religious sisters, you would have brothers. You had very few lay people. Very few lay people. And if you did, it was usually like a housekeeper, a cook, the receptionist. Vatican II happened in the 60s. And after Vatican II, it really exploded the possibilities for the laity. And it's really chaplaincy came alive then. Chaplaincy, just to speak to chaplaincy in the Catholic world, canonically, canon law is basically the law we follow. And canonically, the only person that can actually use the term chaplain is a priest. A lot of people don't know that. We've worked with the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops to say, hey, we get that canonically only a priest can be a chaplain, but this is a secular term and it's a professional term and we really need to use it. And so they do allow us and they endorse our chaplains, even if they're lay people, religious sisters, etc. And so I see John up in the corner from Canadian Association of Spiritual Care. We often think about maybe what would it look like if we used the term they use, which is spiritual care clinician. And so not a conversation for today, but maybe eventually. So the Catholic Church, very hierarchical, but there is the laity is growing and the laity is allowed to do much, much more in within the Catholic within the Catholic faith, within the Catholic institution. I'm a lay woman leading a national organization. This probably wouldn't have happened 20 years ago. So there's some great movement happening. And you see that actually in the Catholic Church, there's a lot of women being appointed to some of the bigger organizations. So yeah. I know that was like
No, that was really, really helpful. And I want to encourage others to feel free to throw questions into the chat. If you have any questions, you can send them to everyone or you can send them directly to me. I think that, you mentioned that the church is going in the direction of no longer proselytizing. And I'm wondering if you can speak to how that happened, and also, what the church separately, what the church's relationship with Israel is as well.
Yeah, I think post-Vatican II was a huge movement for us, and that was part of what came out of it. The theology of we really want to evangelize and disciple people and invite them into the church, but we don't want to go and say, you have to become this or you're going to hell, right? Because it's not great theology. It's not the best way to win friends. So there was a huge shift. The Catholic Church has a lot of we need to do a lot of forgiveness, or we have a lot of work to do in the space of forgiveness and healing, especially to our Jewish brothers and sisters, and especially after the Holocaust, and many other events in history. Many other events in history, but especially the Holocaust. And I think there's been so the Catholic Church as an institution recognizes it, but there's so much more work to do. And we're much space for a lot of our other cultural communities, especially our native brothers and sisters here in the US. And so the Catholic Church is starting to look internally to say, hey, we've done some wrong. We also had the big sex abuse that came out for really the past 20 years. And so there's just a lot of work we're doing in the area of healing, rethinking how we do things, because we don't know if we move forward and how we move forward. So, yeah.
That takes such courage and strength to talk about those topics and to own that and also work on that healing. And I think that you shared it just with such openness, and I want to appreciate that.
Thank you.
Really. And the I received another question, which was specifically the Catholic Church's connection to Israel or official responses to things. Just for those who maybe don't know, you know, where does the Catholic Church generally stand? So, you know, after October 7th, or just sort of what are the for those who don't know, what is the relationship between Israel and, let's say, the Vatican?
Yeah, great question. It's a great question. I think what's great is it always depends who your leaders are. So Pope Francis is going to approach things very differently than previous popes. I do think that throughout this country, a lot of bishops came out and came forward with statements around peace, some specifically towards Israel, but more were broader statements of just peace. Because the Catholic Church has such, our history comes out of Israel, I think there's such an importance to protect it and protect the people in it. And so, I think Pope Francis has just done such a phenomenal job in the space of naming what we've done, what we still need to do. And he's very pragmatic. He's very transparent. And saying we've caused some harm, and how do we protect our brothers and sisters? And because this is our history too. So,
are there, just building on that healing and pragmatic response of, you know, we need to face some of this internally and externally. Are there certain things that are happening, or that, let's say, if certain Jewish communities around the country, the world, would like to engage with their local bishop and build relationships?
Yeah,
the things that are happening that we can know more about?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's a little hard because every bishop is so different and what they do is so different. I would say almost all of our bishops are really working towards ecumenism and interfaith, and they understand the profound gift that it is. And for our community, for the Catholic community to be strong, we're only as strong as our partners, right? We're only, and I say that all the time with NACC, we are only as strong as our partners. We bring our faith to the table, and that's powerful and beautiful, but we couldn't be who we are without like NAJC or the Canadian Association of Spiritual Care or our Muslim brothers and sisters. And so I think there's a general sense of that throughout the country. I think there's tensions in certain parts of the world. But I think that when you, as a Catholic, I'm seeing all the time, I'm reading articles on interfaith dialogue, ecumenical dialogue, the importance for it. When you go to graduate school, you have to invest time in studies around ecumenism and interfaith. I love that our competency is to become a chaplain. Include, you know, you have to understand, fully understand what ecumenism and interfaith dialogue looks like. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, and I think it's also very instructive to us that, you know, there, this is part of the culture in the Catholic faith and leadership. And so there's a welcoming to reaching out and to building those bridges. And that also you, I mean, this is coming from someone who was the director of the Archdiocese in Seattle. So, you know, you're very aware of the systems and how they function. So I think that's it's a really positive thing for us to hear too. So I want to recognize we have about 13 minutes left. If anyone has questions that they want to make sure to get in, feel free to put it in the chat. I wanted to, and I'll just sort of ask a question in the meantime. Okay, never mind. I got one. Great. Have you had dialogue with university students who are anti-Israel?
Mm-hmm. Great question. I would say personally, no. I don't have a lot of intersection though with students, admittedly. Not within our organization. I mean, that's a conversation we would shut down immediately. And we would have to really dig in. Why is this person, if they're going to be a member of our organization, that's not language we accept. And so, so within our organization, no, within students, I really haven't. I haven't had those conversations, admittedly, because I'm just not in those environments. And If I can, if you don't mind, if I could back up for a second, something just came to my mind, and I apologize. My dog's in the background, but he's out of the room.
We love
So
your dog. Please don't worry about your dog.
he's very high maintenance.
I am a
Very
dog
high maintenance.
person, so I will just say that for everyone. Go for
High
it.
maintenance. When one of the questions, it was, when you went to, when I went to Israel, what was one of your what was one of my profound experiences? So of everything I saw, the most profound experience I had, and it led me on a trajectory for a really long time to study the Holocaust. So I went to the Holocaust Museum, and since I've been able to go to the Holocaust Museum in different parts of the world, for some reason, or for all the reasons, it just had a really profound impact on me. And so after I left, I made a real commitment to learn. And so I started reading everything. I tend to do this. I'll get on a topic and I just go down the deepest, darkest rabbit hole and really read everything about that. But it really meant so much to me to, I had grown up with Jewish family, and so I had heard about all the things, and you hear a story, and we had family members die in the Holocaust, and but I don't think I really felt it until I was there. And so after that, I really just made it, I made a commitment to do this. And so every time I travel anywhere, so I was in Prague a couple years ago, I make sure to always go to those places and to learn about the places and the history. I remember it. So I was 17 years old. I remember coming home and I just said, "Dad, what book do I read?" And he's like, "Read Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl's Search for Meaning." And so I did. And I'm like, "Wow, okay." So that just led me on this really so I would say out of everything I did in Israel, for some reason, that was my trajectory. And I continue to do that. So anywhere I travel, that's what I do. And I find it. And I love history anyways, but we need to know real history. And sometimes the only way to know real history is when you're there and you get to see it and touch it and hear it, all the things.
Erica, you're such an inspiration. I will speak on behalf of others, and I welcome people to put it in the chat too. But I think all of us are probably feeling how honest and humble and courageous and kind, deeply introspective you are. And it's such a model to think that, anywhere you travel, you seek out looking for the place where you can learn more about the suffering that's happening and that has happened historically, and how we can connect more to that history and to the people there. So I want to thank you for giving us that. Someone just said thank you for sharing and being so vulnerable. It's I really I when I said at the beginning we're going to hear your heart, I really think that you've given us that, and that's a tremendous gift. So I have one last question for you, and then we'll wrap up. As we've talked about, in the midst of darkness and loss and pain, we're having this conversation to bring positivity and connection. And I think that you've really embodied that in this conversation. And we want to ask, what do you want our community to know from you personally, from your community, from your faith? What do you want? You've mentioned so much that we're going to carry in our hearts, but is there something that you want our community to know or take away from this moment, this holy moment?
No, thank you for the question. Well, I think the NACC, I've only been with the NACC for 2+ years, and I am just profoundly touched by this organization and the people within it and their desire to learn and advocate and love working with Allison and all of you with NAJC. And so I think it's a mutuality of how do we continue to work together. And I think there was what we did after October 7th, there was we were getting calls and emails to saying, "We don't know what to do. We don't know what to do. We're actually feeling overwhelmed because we don't know how to support this community." And so thus the task force. But I think we still sit with that feeling of maybe guilt of not knowing a sense of protection of our community members and our friends of how do we serve you? How do we advocate for you? Because I think all of our members are super well-intentioned, but they don't know some of the history. They don't know some of the struggles. So I think it's that. It's how we're really looking to NAJC and our Muslim brothers and sisters to say, how do you teach us? And I hate to say that because you shouldn't have to be the teachers. Really, we should have to do it ourselves and do the work. But Yeah, I think our community members are just, they're so well-intentioned and they want to grow and they want to learn. And they would, I think, 100%, if they ever said anything or did anything that was by any means anti-Semitic or hurtful, they would want to know immediately. So, yeah.
I think, that's the opening for opportunities for us to learn together, where, there we can learn from each other's faiths, and we can learn, as you've taught us tonight so much about your connection to Israel and your faith. I think it's opened a lot of our eyes and understanding, even historically and culturally today, how we may a Catholic brother or sister might be relating to the land of Israel and to current events, and how we might find a point of connection. So I want to thank you for sharing that openness to learning and to dialogue, and I want to reciprocate that we really want that, and that the bridge is to be built, whether it's between chaplaincy organizations, and we're so grateful that John Hayward's here as well tonight, between chaplaincy organizations that have that ability to enter into the liminal space, and also between communities across the country that have, as you mentioned, when we think of Israel, there's a religious location on every corner. And that's true in certain parts of America, but sometimes it's the same faith. And what it means to be siloed and not necessarily reach out to the other faith communities, whether it's coming from a place of fear, or a face fear of a feeling of the unknown, not knowing how. And I really feel like you've empowered us to open up those conversations to, I mean, to tell me if I'm wrong, but how it was feeling is, if we, every bishop is different, every priest is different, but that the culture of the Catholic Church at this stage, especially, in this current moment in history, would be to welcome dialogue with Jewish communities and to welcome bridge building.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's so beautiful about the church is in this country, we're the second, the Catholic Church is the second most diverse body in the entire country, next to the military. And so there's a lot of diversity li that lives within our church walls and all the things. I won't say that we always get along and they're always things are going copacetically and well, but you see it. You walk into a church now and you really see the diversity and the multi languages. And there's this sense of, a lot of Catholics get comfortable. They go into a church, they want to sit into the same pew they've been in for 30 years, and that's okay. That's just human nature. Right? Some of you are smiling because it happens probably in your faith community too, right? We have our pew, don't mess with our pew. But I think we're in this stage that the Catholic Church is going through a synodal process, a listening process with the Pope. And it's really about, okay, how are we going to move forward? Because we can't really keep doing it the way we were doing it. And so in order to move forward, we have to really be intentional about listening to each other and listening to each other in a different way. So, yeah, lots of work to be done, but good stuff.
Amen. Well, thank you for being an angel, a shaliach, an extension of that work, for taking so much time with us tonight to share that.
Love it. And if you have any questions for me, I'll put my email in
Yeah,
the
I think
chat
we'd love
room.
that. And so we want to officially thank you, Erica, for giving your time to our listeners, for being with us tonight, or if you're listening on the podcast in the future. Our co-sponsoring organizations, Netivot Shalom, Moshe House Based Inn, International Rabbinic Fellowship, and Neshama Association of Jewish Chaplains. Our next Let's Talk, Interfaith Voices on Israel, will actually take place next week on April 1st. Because of Passover and holidays coming up, we're going to have one next week and then one after Passover. So it's April 1st, same time and same Zoom. We're going to connect then with Dr. Jeffrey Chadwick, who's a professor at Brigham Young University. He's part of the LDS, the Church of Latter-day Saints. He's a biblical archaeologist who works regularly on digs in Israel and partners with Bar-Ilan University. So please join us for that next week. Thank you again, Erica. Thank you all for being with us tonight. And we wish you a safe, joyful evening and a happy, meaningful, uplifting Holy Week.
Thank
Thank
you.
you. It's
Thank you
great to
all.
see everybbody.
Thank you to Rabbanit Alyssa Thomas Newborn and Erica Cohen Moore for their engaging dialogue. You can also catch this series on NAJC's YouTube channel. Watch this feed for future editions of Let's Talk, Interfaith Voices on Israel. Also check out this feed for the regular episodes of Neshama Cast featuring conversations on Jewish spiritual care today. Neshama Cast is found on all major podcast platforms. Our theme music is a nigun for Ki Anu Amecha, written and performed by Reb Cantor Lisa Levine. Please help others find the show by rating and reviewing the show on Apple Podcasts. We welcome comments and suggestions for future programming at neshamacast@gmail.com. And be sure to follow NAJC on Facebook to learn more about Jewish spiritual care happening in our communities. May we all work together to heal our world.